This is The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin Davies. We all like to spend time in parks, but are they just a perk of a great neighborhood, or is it crucial for people to be able to interact with nature and green spaces like parks? Many of our childhood memories happened in parks. To some extent, we're probably aware that parks in the neighborhood where we grew up had an impact on who we are today. It turns out that parks are a crucial part of any community. They have a significant impact on the development of children and the happiness of everyone in the neighborhood. That's why, over the last 20 years, the city of San Antonio has been working to expand its park acreage and add amenities. So what's your favorite San Antonio park? What improvements would you like to see there? Do you buy into the strategy that improving city parks is a dollar well spent on improving the quality of life in San Antonio? Call into The Source this afternoon. The number is 210-614-8980, 210-614-8980. Email us at thesource@tpr.org. We're joined this hour by Xavier Urrutia. He is the director of the City of San Antonio Parks and Recreation Department. Mary Jane Verrett is the executive director of the San Antonio Parks Foundation, and Catherine Nagel is the executive director of the City Park Alliance, a national organization dedicated to urban parks. And welcome back to The Source, all of y'all. It's great to have you here. So, Xavier, tell us about the status right now of San Antonio Parks. I mean, we're growing our parks.
So our parks are growing. We have, over the last decade, a little bit over a decade, doubled our acreage. And I think also, if you look at the last few bond programs that the City of San Antonio has issued, the voters have overwhelmingly approved a number of significant investments, not only to add acreage, but also to improve the existing parks and add new amenities to our park system. So I think what we've seen, and then also from our dedicated sales tax that is specifically, we have one piece that's to protect the aquifer, but another piece to do the hike and bike trails along the creekway system. We have seen San Antonians say, if this money is specifically for parks, we're behind it 100%, and we want to see this grow. And so I think that is kind of a shift I think we've seen in the culture of San Antonio, not only to care about green spaces, but also to be active, wanting to be in active green spaces and to have amenities and things that draw you to a park.
Mary Jane, executive director of San Antonio Park Foundation, do we know how San Antonio uses its parks? Which parks get the most use, and what do people want out of their parks?
Parks are used throughout San Antonio, all different areas. We're lucky in San Antonio to have parks that are spread throughout the city and are available to everybody. One of the things, parks are a respite as we all travel through our seasons and the storms in our lives, and they welcome everybody regardless of socioeconomic status or race or ethnicity. I think we have some fabulous parks when you look throughout the city, but even centrally located in the middle of the city. I think the Southside Lions Park is just stellar when you look at it. It has great walking trails, and how many places can you fish inside the city? So I think that's one of the highest used parks, in addition to Brackenridge Park. I think everybody has memories that are built in parks in San Antonio, and they travel with us throughout our lives.
I recently joined a running club in San Antonio, San Antonio Roadrunners. It's a really good organization, really well organized. And part of the great thing about it is every week we're going to different areas to run. So I'm getting a tour of certain parks in San Antonio and areas that I've never been to before. And I really appreciate that it's spread all over the city. And we have done running events at Southside Lions Park and really saw what a beautiful, great green space that is, and how and it's in a great neighborhood as well. So you can see how that park, and there's a senior center there that's also state-of-the-art. A lot of things are happening at these parks that are just aces. So, Xavier, I mean, can you add to
so
that?
We always talk about parks and people and places, but really what we're talking about is people with people. Because if you really think of our park system, you look how it's, like running groups like you're in that go to all different sectors of our city. Same thing with our park system, with the Greenway trails that are connecting all the different parks. It's not only connecting place to place, it's connecting people to people. So really, I think that's one of the unity behind San Antonio, when you're able to have someone who maybe goes down to the Mission Reach and does a run or a bike ride, or maybe they're at the Leon, on the Leon Trail, maybe up at the New Star Trail, Valero Trailhead. So, you know, again, it's bringing people together and also sharing environment. And, you know, our city is very different from all, you know, quadrants of the city, different ecosystems, the look, the feel. So I think that's what's really incredible. Our park system is, it is very unique. And you think everything from the World Heritage Sites to the Mission Reach, Museum Reach, just in that segment right there, you won't find that anywhere else in the country, nowhere else in the country.
Catherine Nagel, Executive Director of the City Parks Alliance, a national organization dedicated to urban parks. I'm reading all these things. They're saying parks do this, parks do that. They add to economic development. They add to, they help people deal with stress. And they also reduce crime. How do parks do all that great stuff?
Well, it's great to be with you all. Well, parks are really essential infrastructure for 21st century cities. They are, you know, where most people think about parks as some sort of nice green space, a place where you recreate, but they actually do all kinds of other things as well. They're multifunctional. And if we think about the definition of infrastructure as the basic structures and facilities needed to sustain societal living conditions, parks are there to help make urban environments healthy places to live in. They're spurring economic development by creating a high quality of life where people want to live, where they want to stay, and where they want to move to. They are doing things like reducing public costs in the amount that we spend on law enforcement by helping to reduce crime and creating safer places where communities to gather. So they actually have all kinds of benefits that are both saving cities money and also driving economies.
Well, explain to me, draw me a map. Tell me how parks reduce crime.
So they do that, there's been a really interesting set of research that's been done in the past few years where researchers are looking at the impact that even the conversion of a vacant lot to one that is just where they tree it up, where they maybe put a fence around the lot, add some grass and add some trees. And actually, one, it changes the perception in the community and sort of creates more community pride. More people are on the street. You kind of have this informal surveillance going on. And then there's, sort of more activation in these communal the gathering spaces. So there's just more sort of positive activity happening in neighborhoods. When you have community gardens, more people are there coming together, and it just changes the social dynamics of a community. And I think that's one of the driving factors in reducing the both property and violent crime.
We got an email from Mary. It says our community would benefit greatly from adding more toddler-friendly areas at Woodlawn Lake, for example, rolling hills, additional fishing piers, natural play areas, toddler basketball court, a bike lane, and more. That's what Mary contributed. We invite you to call in with your ideas for San Antonio parks. What do you think about investing in parks in San Antonio? This is a strategy that the city has been after for decades, and now we have tripled our park acreage over the past 20 years. This is The Source on Texas Public Radio. Call in. The number is 210-614-8980. We continue after this break. Welcome back to The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. Why do parks matter, or do they matter? Give us a call. The number is 210-614-8980. We recently had a park that was very much in the news in San Antonio, and I wanted to see if there's anything you could add to that, since you are the director of the City of San Antonio Parks and Recreation Department, Xavier Urrutia. So tell us more. What's happening at Travis Park now that the controversial monument to Confederate soldiers has been removed?
So I think the park will continue to evolve as it has. You know, a park reflects the values of a community. And I think what we saw when, you know, the park for a number of decades had really kind of been desolate and really no one took ownership of that park. And a couple of years back, we went in with Project for Public Places and did some placemaking and kind of just really gave a facelift to that park. And we saw really new energy coming to that park, you know, and the, you know, ballet in the evenings, movies at night, during the day you could check out games, and there's like a huge chessboard. And so again, activating the space and making it a place for people to come together. And I think that's what we're seeing is a continuation of that value of people coming together, of there being social equity in our park system, and that looking at make sure that again our parks reflect the values of our community.
And moving forward, will there be a public input to decide what to do with adding another monument of some sort there?
Yes. So there will be something to, whether that's public art or some other type of feature, that will be part of the discussion that we continue to have with the community.
There is some discussion about relocation of the cenotaph. Is that from the Alamo? I remember one person said that area, but there's...
Not aware of that being okay. any discussion.
But there's also talk about moving it to where the Gompers statue is now, which is...
Closer to the convention center.
Yeah.
I've heard that as well.
Because people say that's where the actually there's some sort of Alamo connection there.
Correct.
Yeah. All right. And so Mary Jane Verrett, Executive Director of the San Antonio Parks Foundation, I know you have Jazz Alive that happens at Travis Park, and the logo y'all had featured that monument. So y'all had to do address that.
Yes, in order to meet the needs of the community as quickly as possible. We had to adjust the logo on all of the information that we had put out related to Jazz Alive, and Travis Park designed a new logo that eliminates that monument from the center of its logo and instead addresses it simply as Travis Park.
But Jazz Alive, talk about that.
Jazz Alive is a great music festival that's one of the City of San Antonio's sanctioned festivals. We entertain, it's free and open to the public, and we entertain about 20 to 25,000 people over Friday and Saturday coming up September 15th and 16th. It's just an open music concert. I think there is such a great synergy between music and parks and nature and being outdoors. I think it just makes music even more magical.
All right, let's go to the phones with Jill. And Jill, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Gilles, it's French. Don't worry, I'm not.
Gilles.
Yes, there you go.
All right.
I absolutely love the trails. I'm an avid runner throughout the city, and I use them all the time. And so I'm a big supporter of all that, and I hope it continues. I wanted to say I tried running the San Pedro Creek extension the other day. And I noticed there are no water fountains along it. There's no shade, and there's no way to even get off of it if you're tired. And so in addition to runners, I was suddenly concerned, what about the elderly or people in wheelchairs or children that could be out there and could get a heat exhaustion or heat stroke? So I really wanted to say, you know, when designing these long trails, a lot of them are shaded, but if they're not, you know, please consider shade or water fountains, because it could be dangerous otherwise if you get stuck out there.
Okay. Is that open now, the San Pedro Park?
So there's a piece on a southern piece of San Pedro. It connects actually from the Apache Creek. It actually connects to the San Pedro Creek, which then actually goes to the confluence of the San Antonio River, which is on the south side, kind of the southern part of the city, west side to the south side of the city. So it is very different than our other trail systems. It's a much more urban environment. We are actually, our tree program this year, we're going to go and do some forestation efforts along what we call the West Side Creeks. That's this area that he mentioned, because it is. It's very open. It's mainly the big drainage channels that everyone remembers through there having, you know, the trail system. So we're going to look at both forestation efforts, and we actually are including in this year's budget some design enhancements to do there. So really to make it more approachable from the street level. Like he mentioned, you may not think you can get out, or where do you get out? You know, you don't want to go for another mile or so. There are exits, but they're not probably as clear and as aesthetically pleasing as they could be. So we're going to be doing some work going forward, adding some features to those trail segments that are open already.
Isn't the San Antonio River Authority working on a some maybe a park or something at the confluence?
So the River Foundation, Santa River Foundation, has a confluence park with their new education facility. They'll be opening, I think, either late this fall or early in 2018. And we've partnered with them as well. And again, that's at the confluence of where the San Pedro Creek reaches the San Antonio River for the Mission Reach right there. And so again, when you think about taking trails all the way from even west of Elmendorf Lake Park, you can head all the way to the San Antonio River, head all the way to Mission Espada on the far south side of San Antonio. Again, connecting people and places, all that the trail system is designed to do.
So connecting people and places, that involves all frequently working with other organizations like the San Antonio River Foundation, but also state parks, national parks, all sorts of even private companies and nonprofits. So and like the San Antonio Park Foundation. So it's a lot of people coming together to make San Antonio parks shine.
Yeah, definitely. There's been a group that has, you know, always, you know, the foundation, Parks Foundation, has always been spearheading a lot of our acquisitions and development of parks. But then with our conservancies, whether the Brackenridge Conservancy, Hardberger Park Conservancy, and then our other partners, everything from, you know, the San Antonio River Authority to SAWS, the National Park Service, even Texas Parks and Wildlife, we each have a niche. And again, to me, that you used a word earlier and talked about a mosaic that our park system, and that's really what it is. It really is a mosaic of a park system. It's just not one park by itself isolated. It's a number of parks that can provide multiple experiences and multiple amenities and really provide that quality of life that San Antonio is known for, because you can go to all different parts of the city, whether you want to go somewhere old and historic or you want something more rustic and you want to be hiking, whether that's Friedrich Natural Area, for example. So again, lots of different experiences all in one city, the seventh largest city in the country.
Catherine Nagel, can you talk about, from your point of view, a national point of view, how cities can partner up to maximize their park space, green space?
Sure. You know, as we've heard, these parks are doing so much, and they're being designed in more complex ways to address all kinds of needs. And as a result, parks departments, as we've heard, are working with their counterparts, transportation departments as greenways are built, or health departments as we look at how to activate parks to address public health issues, water utilities as we look at how parks can help manage stormwater. So there's a lot of that sort of public-public partnership sort of model going on. And then in addition, we have the public-private model, you know, in case in point with your San Antonio Parks Foundation working with the public department. In addition, we're seeing business improvement districts working with parks departments and beginning to see sort of the private sector developers looking at green space as well. So there's a whole new ecosystem, really, of organizations that are involved in keeping cities green and park-like.
Yeah, ticking off all those organizations, I should have mentioned the county, because County Judge Wolf has certainly been at the forefront of doing all that. Let's go back to the phones with Julia. And Julia, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Hi, and hi to Mary Jane and Xavier. Julia Murphy here. I wondered if Xavier could tell us, kind of give us an overview of like how many acres of parkland we have in the city, and then how he and his staff on the city side managed to take care of all of that land in the seventh largest city in the United States. That was a good segue. So I'm sure it's a monumental effort, and it would be neat to hear how it's managed day in, day out.
All right, Julia, thank you for the call.
So, you know, when we talk about 20,000 acres plus, that's really the whole, all parks in the San Antonio area, both county, city, state, federal. Ourselves, we maintain the Parks Department probably around 13,000 acres. Some of those, of course, you know, you're talking about everything from over 200 playgrounds, 26, you know, pools and splash pads, 16 skate parks. So there's numerous amenities, and that's not even programming. When we get into what we do on our recreation side with, 5,000 plus kids that we just finished, having all summer, and some, our summer youth program, and our community centers and our fitness in the park initiatives, which really look at health and wellness. But, every year we've seen an increase in the Parks Department budget. We've been very lucky. We have a very supportive mayor and council and city manager that understand the importance and the balancing of all the infrastructure needs. While we may have a very large budget for streets and it may still be the number one priority in our community, we know that that's coupled with other things that this community finds just as important. May not be the number one priority at the end of the day, but it is still a priority. And I think what we've seen over the years is continued investment and continued increase in our investment in our public spaces and our green spaces.
So Mary Jane Verrett, Executive Director of the San Antonio Park Foundation, and, of course, Mayor Cockrell is somebody that we celebrate and her support for San Antonio Parks. Did she sort of set us on this course of increasing parkland?
Oh, yes, without a doubt. She certainly paved the way for the San Antonio Parks Foundation to reach out to many others and to, nowadays people can't afford the luxury of working in silos. You have to work together with all of the groups that have an interest in what you're doing. And so one of the things the Parks Foundation is getting ready to launch is a Park Advocates Network. By that network, we plan to create that awareness. The city has so many resources, and yet there's all of these little groups that simply don't know that the resources are right there for them that are available on, such as the Adopt a Tree program, and how all the biking trails. All of these things are available right at the tip of your fingertips. So we do try to honor Lila's initial path. Like every organization, we have to evolve and to grow and to work with others. And so I think that in order to realize the economies of scale that come with being in a community that does work well together, plays well together, we want to make the most of that. I will say that I just returned from the Greater and Greener Conference presented by City Parks Alliance, and I learned so many useful tools and how to connect all of those groups together just by being a part of that conference. So that was very helpful to me, Catherine.
Okay, we got an email from David. I would like to submit the addition of adding disc golf courses to parks on the south side, Xavier.
So we do have a disc golf course in Pearsall Park, which is in the south side, but depending, of course, whatever your town is asking about, maybe you might be talking about southeast side. So that's definitely something we can look at. When we do all our improvements, we do a public engagement piece to it. So even though there's a huge public engagement as part of the bond process, we still go back then once the bond is passed. For example, for this 2017 bond, we will be having meetings on all the different park improvements that we have slated. So there will be community meetings to be able to get people's input on things they want to see in their parks. So there's still a lot of opportunity for things to move and change that to see kind of what are the things you want to see in your park system.
Got an email from Bonnie. What's the best way to for the public to find out about parks and activities? We have a website.
Sure, yes, at our park. So either you can even do SanAntonioParksAndRecreation.com.
Because you have every park listed. You click on that park, it'll show you on the map, and it'll show you all the amenities that are there, if they have disc golf, if there's water available, all those things.
It's called Find a Park, and it gives you all the information. Or if you just want to say, hey, where are there outside basketball courts? It'll give you everywhere in the city that we're in our parks that we have outside basketball courts. So again, a lot of opportunity to provide different experiences across the city.
And also information about reserving space, which is
all
important.
On a click.
Okay, so we'll have that link on our website as well. Got another half hour. We're going to keep talking about parks in San Antonio. Got a lot of callers here, some more emails and stuff on Twitter to get on the air. If you want to join in, the number is 210-614-8980, 210-614-8980. And this is The Source on Texas Public Radio. We'll be right back. Welcome back to The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin Davies. Friedrich Park, Cathedral Rock Natural Park, Elmendorf Park, Collins Garden, Southside Lions, Pearsall, Beacon Hill Neighborhood Linear Park, Denman Estate Park. We've got a lot of great parks in San Antonio. Actually, there are 247 actual named parks in the city, and we're talking about them this afternoon. Why parks matter, how a dollar invested in a public park improves, is a dollar well spent for the city. That's up for debate. You can weigh in on either way. The number to call in is 210-614-8980. And let's get Daryl in on the conversation. Hey, Daryl, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Thank you very much. This is the most relevant news show. I'm happy to be on it.
Thank you.
So what I'm curious about is a while back, McAllister Park, a good portion of it was changed over into baseball fields. And as a mountain biker, that doesn't bode very well to my use of the park. How does one get more involved with how our parks are developed and changed or preserved?
All right, Daryl, I appreciate that. And so, okay, let's go to Xavier Urithia. He is the director of the City of San Antonio Parks and Recreation Department. So did that happen? Did we lose land to baseball fields?
May have been probably a decade and a half ago or maybe two decades ago. But I think what we're seeing, again, with not only the popularity of parks, but is also this stewardship, this interest in, you know, I want to be able to have some say in what happens in my parks and my green spaces. So there's great opportunities. A lot of these parks have friends groups that are affiliates with the Parks Foundation. So like McAllister Park has a friends group that meets regularly, that talk about, you know, either issues in the park or things that they can bring to our attention. Because while we may be there on a daily basis, we're not seeing every square inch of, you know, a 500-acre park. So they actually help us in certain things. Like if a fence is down or a light happens to be out. So we have friends groups. And then we also, as we go through these improvements, like I mentioned with the bond program, is we do public engagement. We actually have meetings that we post and we say, well, we're meeting on this day to talk about any improvements to this park. What do people want to see? What are things that we need to address? And so there's a lot of opportunity, I think, for people to be able to have a say in what their parks end up looking like.
Mary Jane Verrett at the San Antonio Parks Foundation, you're a great point of contact to help steward these parks.
Oh, yes, without a doubt. The Friends of McAllister Park are working together with the San Antonio Parks Foundation actually right now. We just received a $10,000 grant from the REI Co-op, and there's a very active group of bikers at McAllister Park, and this fall we're getting ready to work together to collaborate with the city to put in new signage, and we have reached out to that Friends group to help with us to design where the signs need to go and where's the best place to put them. So we all work together in order to do what's best for the community. So I would welcome his voice and the place for you to join in if you have an opinion on where those need to go and where we need to improve is with the Friends of McAllister Park.
So Catherine Nagel, Executive Director of the City Parks Alliance, a national organization dedicated to urban parks. I mean, you could just say build it and they will come, but people will come use the parks, but you want to use them to a maximum effect. So by having friends, organizations, listening to the community, trying to make sure we're giving people what they want, is that how we get the maximum impact for every dollar that we spend?
Sure. Yeah, it's build it, but it's also program it and steward it. We've actually been involved in a national study with the RAND Corporation where we looked at neighborhood parks in 25 cities. And what we found was in the parks where there was programming and some kind of activation, you had a higher level of activity. So it's really important to not only have the physical space, but to make sure that there are the things to do there. And that happens through through the public agencies, but also it happens through the volunteer groups and the friends groups, the kinds of groups that Mary Jane is involved with.
So again, email from Jesse says the soccer field at Rainbow Hills Park has been mostly dirt since I've lived there. Also lights at other fields. So when it gets dark earlier, we can't utilize that field. So Rainbow Hills Park, and are you familiar with their soccer field? And you're busy looking through your papers.
So I'm looking to see if they were, I'm almost positive they probably were in the bond program. But they have $600,000 in this coming bond program, which we are looking to do improvements, including lighting. So a lot of people forget, you know, a lot of times our parks are built in phases. One of the things is you want to be able to provide an amenity for people to do right away. So, you put a field in. We may not have enough money for lighting, but again, available during the day, the summers when we, you know, it doesn't get dark till almost 10. So again, something for people to use right away. That's one of the things when we talk about activation of park, you want to be able to get people in there right away. Lighting helps extend that activation, that usefulness of it. So a lot of times we have parks, Nanny Falcone Park, for example, a lot of residents have been waiting for lighting too. That's in the bond program. So while we built a lot of stuff in the park, they may not have lighting at first, but we come back later and look at, again, through that discussion with neighborhoods and park users, what is it that we need to add? And that's just a piece of the activation piece. Again, getting people in there. You know, one of the things that we also want to make sure you were mentioning earlier about building and they come, it's we also want to build something people want to come to, and having that activation. You know, we've been really lucky with our national association. The National Recreation and Parks Association has really done an emphasis on health and wellness and be able to provide activities in our parks. So everything from our fitness in the park to our walk this way in the park, which was a walking group that we actually train people, and you know, whether it's proper footwear, proper walking to make sure you're not injured. So again, being able to not only provide a space, but something to do in that space has, I think, been very important in how we've changed the way we look at parks.
Okay, Bonnie has called in. And Bonnie, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
And it's so great to hear all these people calling in about our parks. And I just wanted to kind of piggyback on the comment of the person who was the runner about drinking fountains and shade and so forth. Just a reminder to those who are listening, this program started in, wasn't even voted on until 2000. And I think that the Parks Department has come so far in getting our trail and parkway system put in. It's an amazing amount of work that's been done. So you really have to look at it as a relatively new thing. And when it was started, people really weren't sure if they were going to be using it or not. And now I think that point has been proved that it's such an asset. So stay involved. And to those people who want these amenities in their park.
All right, Bonnie, thank you for that. So Mary Jane Verrett, San Antonio Parks Foundation, can you talk about your relationship with runners and bikers? And, you know, it was kind of a chicken and egg situation for a long time with San Antonio. You know, it's like, well, why build these trails if we don't have a biking community? But now we have them, and these biking trails, they're filled on the weekends.
Yeah. Actions speak louder than words. And so when you see people out in parks and you see parks full every weekend, you see, and not even just the weekend, go to Phil Hardberger Park any day of the week, and there's always somebody walking through there or there's an activity going on. And when you think about it, nearly 80% of the American population is moving into urban areas. So it's more important for the health of the entire our population to have all these trees that improve the quality of air. And I honestly don't see what's not to love about a park.
So Beacon Hill Neighborhood Linear Park is an innovative park, not your traditional, you know, big space of land. It's sort of developed in as a mosaic in that area right off of Hildebrand next to the Evergreen of Nursery, and it goes into the neighborhood. So talk about that, Xavier.
So what we had was actually stormwater had gone in and done some stormwater work, and basically the city had purchased a number of parcels that created basically an underground storm system to move water, flooding in that area to alleviate flooding. So we were left with a bunch of empty lots that the city owned. And so the neighborhood actually came to the city and really pressed the point of, we want to take this abandoned, or not so much abandoned, but underutilized space that's in the middle of our neighborhood that we see really, if you look at it on a map, creates this snake, this S through our neighborhood, and we think we can connect it. And so they themselves came up with some preliminary designs that some architects who lived in the neighborhood and came to us and to the council office saying, here's our thought and idea. And so little by little, every bond program, there's been money to add and grow this system that has everything from a community garden to a basketball court to just a walking path that links all these different segments and parcels. So it's really unique, and it's back to that idea about taking underutilized space and letting the neighborhood recapture that and own it and the stewardship of it. We have the same thing at Almost Park Terrace. We call it Triangle Park, which looked like a overgrown traffic island. It was really large, but the neighborhood came to us saying, let us put a community garden here, add a gazebo for us, and we will take ownership. We will manage this, and we'll run it, and we'll make sure that it has a lot of community use.
Okay, so I see quite a bit of these little, not big enough to be a park, but they're a green space, and sometimes they're adopted by the neighborhood, and they're jazzed up, and they're made really nice too. And so is this how do we spur that? How do we get more out of that? You know, there's the Green Space Alliance.
So there's a couple of things, right? Green Space Alliance, we fund them to do community gardens. But there's also, even with our Transportation and Capital Improvements Department, they have Adopt-A-Spot, which if it's really more like a traditional traffic island, but maybe it's a bit larger, has some space, green grass or a tree, you can adopt a spot. If they're much larger, then they're usually probably in our park system inventory. And again, we're always looking for partnerships with neighborhoods to, again, to increase that stewardship. Again, if no one's using it, then to me, we haven't really captured the full value of that space. And so unless it's a place to bring people together, then we're still missing half the equation in a successful park.
Got an email from Jess. Fitness in the park is a great initiative. All the parks, great way to increase healthy lifestyle, families, and park attendance. We're going to take a break. We'll come back. We got more phone calls to get on the air. 210-614-8980. Talking about parks in San Antonio. How do we maximize our parks? What do you want to see at your local park? Source continues after this. All right, talking about parks in San Antonio on The Source this afternoon. We got a lot of people want to join our conversation. Why not you? 210-614-8980. Let's go to Lou. Hey, Lou, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Thank you, guys. I'm an avid cyclist and love the Salado Greenway. I had two questions. Could you tell us what plans are in the future for connecting the north and the south parts of the Greenway? And the second question is, are there plans to correct the sewage spills that periodically close the Greenway?
Wow, good question. Thank you, Lou, for calling in. So Xavier Urrutia, the director of the City of San Antonio Parks and Recreation Department.
So in the first piece, yes, we actually have plans to go on the side of Fort Sam Houston, which will allow us to connect the southern piece of the Salado, which right now stops at Jack White, which is just south of the base, to John James Park, which is just north of the base. So that is under design right now.
We have that post right there in the middle.
Correct.
So we actually
won't go on the Salado. We'll get off of the Salado for security purposes of the base. We will have to go to the edge of the base.
So you go to the perimeter.
Correct. We'll go to the perimeter, and then we'll connect back with the trail system that's along the Creekway.
Okay.
So we won't be able to stay along the Creekway in this case, but again, it will connect then the north and south pieces of the Salado.
And what's the timeline?
So that's under design right now. We probably still working through getting all the, you know, once the design's done, the approvals with the feds, which can be a little bit timely. We're probably still looking at another 2+ years before that would be open. On the sewage issue, we are working with the San Antonio Water System. That is something a lot of their sewer system was laid in the creek beds in certain areas of town underneath the creeks. And so when there is issues, then they do end up closing our trails. They are looking at relocating some of those where it's possible and making improvements and therefore would reduce the number of spillages there are. So that's something we work with them. That really falls under their jurisdiction, though, and they will ultimately make the decision on how to rectify that situation.
Got an email from Nancy. I live very close to Lady Bird Johnson Park, which is a very nice park, and I walk every morning, if I can, on the Salado Park Greenway. Many times the bridge from the park to the Greenway is flooded and you can't get across. Are there any plans to accommodate those who want to enter the Greenway from Lady Bird Johnson Park?
So yes, we're also working on that piece as well. There's a low water crossing that actually leads toward the trail system. But again, people also need to remember the trail systems are almost all predominantly the ones that are in the creekway or in the flood zone.
Yeah, they're flood control.
Correct. So we also ask people to please be very cautious. You know, after we just had the storm that we, you know, luckily missed, we were reminding people that, you know, if it's raining, you should not get on the trails. I know this area specifically she's asking about. We are looking at ways to do that. It's just water stays in that area longer than other areas where it recedes faster. So we're looking at how do we get water out of that area quicker.
Yeah, we got an email from Kathy who says, do parks increase the amount of permeable surface areas to help to reduce the flooding? But like we said, you know, our flood control projects, you know, we need the space. We can't build there, so why not turn into a green space?
So most of them are. So if you really think of our large, large parks, McAllister, Almos, they are all have a secondary function as being flood control systems.
Well, probably the primary function, really.
Probably, really, truly, you're correct.
That's why that's where the money came from,
correct.
The purchase. Program.
Which then, right, the land then became usable as a park. So, you know, that's the other thing to remember is parks have a lot of benefits and providing that opportunity, but also when it is most of the time safe to do and we're dry, they're great places to be. But we are part of that whole system. When you think about it, whether it's the San Antonio River, whether it's, you know, the Almos Basin, whether it's McAllister, Mud Creek Park, Panther Springs Park is right behind a dam that Sarah operates, again, to keep from flooding most of the north side of San Antonio. So, again, multiple functions that these public lands provide.
And Martin is on the line. And, Martin, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Hi. You know, I really appreciate, and what I think I'm getting out of this is the deeper appreciation of the park systems and deeper thought processes to the long term and the short terms. And on that, my question is that the last time I went to Breckenridge Park, not too long ago during the summer, which I consider probably, you know, one of the flagship parks of San Antonio, I was scratching my head and shaking my head. I wasn't exactly sure why they're building a apartment complex or condos or some sort of living complex right there where the old horse stables used to be, which I consider smack in the middle of Breckenridge Park.
Okay, Martin, great. So you brought that up because I remember when they had horses there, and now that was private property.
So yes, it is private property. Most people thought that the stables were actually owned by the city and run by the city, but it was private property. And so when the stables closed, gosh, at least probably 25 years ago, maybe, I think, the parcels had been for sale and had been owned, and actually maybe not even for sale, it was just someone was waiting to develop it, and they have built apartments that
it's
are
probably
right
a lot, a very expensive piece of property.
Yes. I mean, again, when you think about in the old days, it used to be people would be like, oh, I don't want to be near a park. But nowadays, that's a great amenity. When you think of everything up through the Broadway reach and, you know, the amount of development we've seen along that area because of the Pearl. And, you know, again, that's the San Antonio River when you think about it. And even when you go south, when you see Southtown, when you see the Lone Star neighborhood, you know, that area, again, all based on having these green spaces that are everyone can access and utilize. Everything from Blue Star to Big Tech's, all that development has really happened because of the public infrastructure of our green space.
So what is happening with Breckenridge Park? Any news?
Lots of good stuff. So, you know, we know Breckenridge was in the bond in a couple of different ways. There's almost $8 million that's going to be used to, we'll have some public engagement meetings on that as well. But really our focus is to look at revitalizing and restoring some of the historic structures in Breckenridge. There's a lot of both Spanish colonial and then post-industrial structures in that park that need to be repaired and refurbished. And then, you know, one of the things we're also looking at is people want to get there. There wasn't enough parking. And so instead of actually taking park space away to add parking, we're going to add a floor to the garage that exists by the Witte Museum already. And then working with the San Antonio Zoo, they have a lease for property that is right next to the highway. It's not on parkland. There will be a garage built there as well that park users can use. So again, really looking at not only allowing more park users to go, but to improve the infrastructure in that park, whether it's the Sakias or the old pump house or the Upper Labor, which is really where the San Antonio River, looked at how San Antonio became San Antonio, is a lot of the histories in that area of the park.
Alamo Plaza is also a city park. What's happening there?
So that is still working with the state and the nonprofit to look at how do we implement that master plan that they have completed. So that work is still ongoing as well.
But will the city give that land to the state, or how will that work?
That all that is still being, worked through the finer points. You know, once you get through the concept and making sure the concept is, approved, and then how do you operationalize that? You know, what's what makes the most sense?
Okay, another caller. It's our last call. Let's get Mike on the air. Hey, Mike, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Hey, thanks for taking my call. My question centers around the use of the parks. I know that after the time change and when the weather cools down, the parks are, they close at dusk. And is there any plans to start adding lighting to some of these parks for this time of year? I think it would really increase the use of the parks.
Okay, Mike, thanks for the call. And so lighting.
So I know he's talking about mainly probably the Greenway Trails and some of our natural area parks. So that is something that we are looking at where it makes sense. So a couple things on this. Again, the Greenway system has become a huge success. And when
people actually commute on that.
Right. So when Bonnie Connor called earlier, she says this is relatively new. She's not really kidding. So in 2005, even though the first vote was in 2000, in 2005, there were 0 miles open. In 2010, we opened 22 miles. By 2017, we had 65 miles open. That's today, 65 miles open. We have another 27 miles under design and construction, and another 27 miles still under planning, 22 miles under planning. So one of the things is, at first, most of the people where these trails are did not want lights or people in their neighborhood after dark. So one is just a shift in the whole public idea and concept of how these trails work. And I think what we find now is the neighborhoods and people want the trails. We have now neighborhoods coming back who early on, back in maybe 2005, 2010, said, no, we don't need a neighborhood connection. Now they want a neighborhood connection, which we want. We want more access points. It's better. So we are looking at where it makes sense from a commuter perspective to have lights where it's maybe not so dangerous, where it's not long strands of emptiness. So it is something that's the next, what we call the evolution of, I think, the Greenway system, is to look at how do we make this not only a recreational and somewhat of a transportation method, but really more of a multimodal component to this system.
Okay, checking back in with Catherine Nagel. Sorry we haven't had meant to talk to you, but we had some hyper-local stuff here. So Executive Director of the City Parks Alliance National Organization. So really quickly, because I got about a minute left, what's the national trend? What can we be looking for next for our parks?
Well, I think we've heard examples of some of the trends nationwide during this call. You know, as more and more people move back to cities, we're seeing cities try to find spaces where they can create new parks, and that might be in, underutilized land. It might be in capping roads. I mean, there's a lot of that happening. They're called cap parks. You see that in Dallas with the Clyde Warren Park. You're seeing old infrastructure being reused, like the High Line in New York City, and other examples of that in Chicago, and places that are looking at any available land that they can turn into parks and open space.
All right. Thank you so much. Talking about parks, apparently there's a lot of people out there with parks on their mind. This is The Source on Texas Public Radio. Thanks for tuning us in.